I'm that river rising, I'm that plume of fire, I'm that debt still out there on a dead desire, I'm that cold wind crying, I'm that hot as rain.
Jeff Daniels is an actor and musician who has been in iconic movies such as Terms of Endearment, Dumb and Dumber, 101 Dalmatians, Fly Away Home, Good Night and Good Luck, and many others. He has also given award-winning performances in television series, including my absolute favorite, The Newsroom, and on Broadway. He currently is on the road going from town to town performing his music, as he has done for well over 40 years. He will be at the Town Crier Cafe in Beacon, New York on Sunday night, and it is an absolute delight to welcome Jeff Daniels to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it.
Really nice to have you here. How are things out on the road these days?
Yeah, you know, I enjoy it. My wife and I, with our dog, we drive her car from gig to gig. The routing is either an hour and a half or 3 hours, and we're kind of worked our way from Cleveland to Pittsburgh, and now we're working our way up through Northampton, Massachusetts, and then I'm in Maine now, and we'll come down, hit Connecticut, and then we'll do the Town Crier, where I've played before. I enjoy that venue.
What do you look for in a venue?
I like the 200 to 300 seaters because it's like playing their living room. And since it's just me with the acoustic guitar, you know, it's storytelling, it's humor, it's that kind of one-on-one intimate connection that, you know, when you're telling a story to somebody. And when you're in a big performing arts center and 1,000 seats, that's harder to do. So I enjoy that the clubs where they're there to see you and they're there to listen, especially on the northeast coast. And the Town Crier has been this way too. The audience wants to hear the words. And as someone who has really focused on the writing, whether as a playwright or songwriter, I lead with that. I lead with the writing and the storytelling and the humor and, you know, make them laugh, make them cry, send them home. But I enjoy that. I have complete control of it. And to be in a room like the Town Crier is the perfect venue for me.
I love that idea of being in complete control. I mean, I think that's what you want as a performer, isn't it? Usually?
Yes, but there are very few places you can get that. Certainly as an actor, as you know, it took a while to learn, but as soon as they say cut, it's theirs. Whether it's the editor and the post-production people, or as soon as the movie screens, it's no longer yours. It's theirs, the audience. And so you give up control. Broadway stage, you know, you're at the mercy of whether it's 8 shows a week or whether it's, you know, the play that was written and the other actors and the director wants this and that. With a guitar and just me, it's all me, all success or all failure. And I do the writing, I do the editing, I do the directing. If I want to change the set list mid-show, I do. I don't have to tell anybody. There's no studio. There are no junior executives, you know, saying, I have some notes, you know. Doing something recently and, you know, we're going through the process of getting a script developed and it's a couple of years ago. And we asked the producer, what's the status of the latest draft? And the producer said, I just got it. I haven't read it yet, but I'll have notes. And that's when I walk out with a guitar, I don't have anybody giving me notes. So I like that part of it.
Give me a sense of, I know that this goes back for many years, in the mid 70s, you get the guitar and you head out, you leave your hometown in Michigan and you were headed to New York City.
It was a big step for a small town kid, you know, right out of the cornfields to Greenwich Village in the 70s. And New York City in the 70s. I mean, it was a tough time. Times Square was not what it is now. Son of Sam, the blackout in 77. It was a tough town, and but I was there chasing a dream, and I was lucky to get involved with a Circle Repertory Company off Broadway in the 70s and met some great people that really steered me in the right directions. And whatever acting approach I take to this day came out of Circle Rep.
As far as the music goes, was the performance of it, did that come at the same time?
That came much later. I the first thing I noticed when I walked into the office as a Circle Rep were the writers. There were two or three playwrights there. Lanford Wilson, who went on to win a Pulitzer Prize as a playwright, was there. Living, breathing playwrights, all of them rewriting a second act. That fascinated me. And I'm not going to get plays done. And so I just started writing songs and trying to, just the act of writing, of creating. And so I would do that, and I would get better at the guitar just to kind of keep creatively alive in between phone calls to be an actor. And it wasn't until 2001, maybe 2002, that anybody in Michigan knew I played. I didn't play out anywhere. I was 25 years of just me on my back porch doing it for me. When I did play out, some people said, I mean, Lanford saw me play out, and he goes, you need to share this with people. And so instead of just staying in my lane and being a good boy and just only being an actor, I said, you know what? I got more going on than just that. So I'm going to do this. And so I've been doing this for the last 25 years. I enjoy this as much, if not more so, than the acting because of that complete creative control.
It would indicate just from what you said that it, by doing it, that the opposite of being a good boy and not staying in your lane, that you're a bad boy. But it shows a range, though. I mean, it isn't.
Well, you got to battle that because you're known for one thing, and now you're trying to do another.
Yeah.
We're only going to let you do one because we have plenty of people who are professional who have devoted their lives to doing this other thing that you want to do. You know, like you do the talk shows and they know I play. And for years it would be, you know, I can play something if you want. No, we got James Taylor as the musical guest. We're good. You know, and I get that. I get that. If a musician, you know, came on a movie set and he would or she would be out of place.
Yeah.
I even did a movie with Dave Matthews, and he was great. He sat in the trailer and he goes, you know, any advice? And I go, yeah, tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It's you. It's not you, Dave Matthews, who went on to be a huge, you know, success. You took a different road and you ended up running a music store and you have these scenes with this kid in the movie. Just see if you can't redirect your life. And so, you know, that was helpful to him. I just play yourself just with just different circumstances. And so but the fact that I kept playing, I kept waiting for the acting career to kind of just self-destruct or end. You know, you get that phone call on Tuesday that you're over. You're the last one to find out, usually. And so this was my backup plan, was to do what I'm doing now. And I've been doing it for 25 years. I enjoy it. I'm going to do even more of it and, you know, and kind of work the acting gigs around it.
Pittsburgh looks like Paris in a misty midnight rain. The Ohio and Allegheny hold hands at Fort Duquesne. There ain't that big a difference between lonesome and alone. Pittsburgh looks like Paris.
Jeff Daniels is our guest. He'll be at the Town Crier Cafe on Sunday night in Beacon, New York. When you look at the acting career, why do you think, what is it about you that you think you have continued to be a successful working actor on television, in movies, on stage? You're Atticus Finch, for God's sakes.
No, I know. I was lucky to get that. That was a proud moment. You know, I early on, I moved to Michigan, back home to Michigan in 1986. And we had been in New York for 10 years. I just wanted to raise the kids there. I didn't think the career would last. So I commuted out of Detroit to either LA or New York or Toronto or wherever we had to go. And I realized early on that if I was going to sustain that, I had to create a range. I couldn't just become a brand. And whether you're an action hero brand or, you know, Clark Gable was a brand, Errol Flynn was a brand. I mean, they played basically themselves. And that's who you went to see. You went to see Gable be Gable. But I wanted to create a range. I wanted to go from A to Z. And when the opportunity to Dumb and Dumber came along, I knew that that was 180 degrees away from some other things I'd done. And then once you've done Dumb and Dumber, and then to then go and, you know, you've got Gettysburg or you've got Pleasantville or later on you've got Atticus Finch on Broadway. To go from to create that kind of range, I mean, Clint Eastwood told me that. He goes, if you can do that movie and you can do that movie, you can do this one. It created jobs in between those two extremes. And it worked. It worked. And suddenly, you know, and now you're surprising the audience. Suddenly you're watching a Western on Netflix called Godless. And I'm playing something that even I didn't know I could do. And Scott Frank did. And that's, I think, what keeps people interested in me, you know, surprising them because I'm surprising myself.
That surprise is I remember seeing you on Broadway on Blackbird and thinking exactly that. This is the guy who was in Dumb and Dumber. I mean, it is amazing that because that was one of the most intense roles I think I've ever seen.
It was an intense play. We did it off Broadway and then we came to Broadway with it. And, you know, it was tense from the moment the play started. And part of the direction from Joe Mantello was, you have to keep that tension taut. It was a horrible play to have to do every night, but man, did you feel like you climbed a mountain every time you got through it? It was tough on us. It was tough on the audience. It was a guy who had had a pedophile, who had a relationship with a 12-year-old girl, and now 15 years later, she shows up at his place of work at now at the age of 27. And he's served his time in prison. He's changed his name. He's changed his life. And she comes knocking on the door and she wants to talk about what happened. And it's in the conference room of where he works. And so right from the get-go, you're coming in, slamming the door, going, "What the hell do you want?" And that's where it starts.
When you get off stage after something like that every night, it just seems that it would take a long time to decompress.
The decompression, you learn how to do that. You learn how to just almost exhale it and leave it behind. Literally, by the time you're walking up the stairs to the dressing room, you've left him behind. The harder part is getting up for him, because I had to come in that door and slam it and go, "What the hell are you doing here?" I had to come in at that level. So for 15 minutes, I would just pace, speed pace backstage to get my heart rate up so that, you know, I, you know, less acting, you know, when you're actually that kind of jazzed up, helped. That was the harder part. You do learn how to, you know, when you take off the costume and you hang it up, you hang him up too.
So and I apologize if this is a tortured analogy, but so then when you are on stage and you are on that stool and you are performing these songs, is that the complete opposite? Because there's a comfort, I would think. There's a comfort because the words are yours and you're telling the story and you're with an audience that is yours. And again, back to the control. But also, it just seems to me that it would be a comfort.
There is something comfortable about it. You're right. You know, this whole show is road tested. It's not like I've picked up a guitar and I'm trying to do something I don't know how to do. It's the same show I've been bringing around. There'll be, 10 gigs of this particular version of it, by the time I get to the town crier. And that's like touring a play. And so there's some ad-libbing involved, some improvisation a little bit, but basically I know where the jokes are. I remember seeing, there was a club in Ann Arbor called The Ark, and there was an folk singer named Utah Phillips.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a buddy of Pete Seeger and Woody Guthrie and all that. And Utah would come out in these overalls and a guitar and a big white beard. He looked like Santa Claus. He was like a former hobo turned folk singer. And he would come out and his first song would be 15 minutes long, called The Great Railroad Divide. And he kept stopping it to tell a story and stopping. And then he would start again. And then he would stop it again. And he did that two or three times till he got to the end of it. And at the intermission, I told my agent who had suggested I go see him, I said, that's some of the best improv I've ever seen. He said, it's not improv. He does it the same way every night. I said, I know how to do that. I've done that on stages before with someone else's words. And so that became kind of the drive behind the show and kind of putting a set list together that works and holds the audience and takes them on a ride and then lets them go. So it's not unlike doing a play. It's just, I did all the writing.
You talk about going to New York and you started in that process of writing songs. If you were looking at the stamp on some of these songs, some of them go back how many years?
Well, there's a couple from the late 70s. There's one in particular from 1978. Some are 10, 15 years old, 20 years old. There are a couple that are a year old. But the one from 1978 was a poem that Lanford Wilson, who went on to win a Pulitzer Prize for drama, handed me in a dressing room at Circle Rap off Broadway. I was writing songs. I wasn't good at it. I was 23 years old. And I looked up and he was in the doorway and he goes, you write songs? I said, yeah, he goes, let me help. And he handed me this poem called Road Signs about a bus trip he took from Lebanon, Missouri up to Chicago to become a graphic artist. And then when that didn't work out, he took another bus to go to New York to become a Pulitzer Prize winning playwright. So here's this poem about this bus trip. And he said, I don't know if it's a song, but see what you can do with it. And I put some music under it and I play that in the show. And it's a great, for me, it's a great payback, a great homage to Lanford, who was a huge mentor of mine, along with Marshall W. Mason, the artistic director. But Lanford was the guy who made me want to be a writer. And he helped me, and he encouraged me, and he also criticized me. And, he made, you want to be a writer? All right, we're going to make you a good one. And so this is that thank you. That song is the thank you to him for pushing me in a direction that I've continued to go down, ever since.
I mean, his work was so incredible and so meaningful. And I'm curious as to whether it be Tally's Folly or he was 5th of July, Burn This. How much did you say, well, first of all, did you just star in any of his productions?
He wrote a part for me in 5th of July.
Yep.
Yeah. And so we got to do that off Broadway, LA, and then also Broadway. That's when I really got to work with Lanford in depth.
In learning and the writing, I mean, you talk about the story, and that story can come from a million different places, right?
Yeah, and Lanford was the first one to say, if you want to be a writer, keep your eyes and ears open. Someone will say something, and you'll know instantly that that's a play, or that's a song, or that's a novel, or that's whatever it is you do. And he was right. There's a couple songs I'll definitely do at the Town Crier that somebody said something, and I knew instantly that was the next song that had to be written. And you write it. He was great about that. And to watch him go through draft after draft after draft to find it. I mean, I learned indirectly about story structure, which when you first attempt to learn story structure, they make it really complicated out in LA, that's for sure, because it can be complex. But it's beginning, middle, and an end, you know. It's boy meets girl, boy loses boy, girl, boy gets girl, you know, or loses her, and then it's a tragedy. But it's more complicated than that. And it's like studying algebra when you're bad at math. But Lanford was really good about laying it out so that I could, you know, I not that I talked to him about it, but you kind of learn as you go, and you, everybody's at the mercy of story structure. It goes back to the Greeks. But you got to learn how to do that. And then Lanford, one of the things he was brilliant at, he would then hide it. Want to see blatant story structure, watch a one-off, watch a show on TV, network TV, where, you know, there's a beginning, middle, and an end, and we got to, you know, it all happens in an hour. You know, some of the longer form series can stretch it out, but, you know, some of those old shows, you know, it's just formulaic, and that's what you got to stay away from. And he was brilliant at not getting caught doing that.
Is that something that is a challenge to go against in songwriting too?
Yeah, a little less, because I'm not as judgmental. I mean, I'll work them. If it's got a chance to get into the set list, it's like moving up to the varsity. You're a freshman, you're on the JVs, you're not there yet. You know, whether it's the guitar playing behind it or the third verse or the whatever, you got to earn your way into that set list. And I'm not writing for a living. I'm not on Music Row trying to sell a song to Brad Paisley. I'm writing for me and my sets, and sometimes I'll write something just to get me through something. How do I process what's going on with whatever? Then I'll write a song about it, and then into the notebook it goes, and that's where it stays. It never sees the light of day, but it can be therapeutic. But I never have the pressure of having to sell a song next month. It's more about painting or writing songs or creating something for my own self. Mm. And the ones I can share with an audience jump out, and those, you know, get kicked up to the varsity.
Let me end with a admittedly self-indulgent question, just because I've always wanted to ask you, but there should have been more seasons of Newsroom, right?
Well, yes and no. I would have stayed with that show for 10 years. I was thrilled working with Aaron, and I loved the show. The cast was great. You know, he was done, and I understood why. A part of it was the problem of staying current. And we were always, if whatever we were shooting today wouldn't come out for 6 months, and then what we were going to shoot, he had to write, and we were always behind. We were never like, you know, today with social media, everything is so present, so right now, that I don't know that we could have kept up with it. And then when Trump got elected, I mean, it got even more chaotic. So I don't know that we would have stayed as current as we needed to be or would have liked to have been. So, you know, I was happy we got to do it. That greatest country in the world speech that Aaron wrote will outlive both of us.
Yeah. And then to get to work with him again and To Kill a Mockingbird.
Well, he came to me after when we were ending Newsroom. He said, "You want to be in Steve Jobs and play John Scully?" I said, "I'd love to." And then as we were promoting the Steve Jobs movie, we were getting ready to do a SAG Q&A, and he said, "We've got the rights to Kill a Mockingbird on Broadway. It's maybe a year or two away. Would you want to play Atticus Finch?" I said, I'm in. My audition was Newsroom, you know? And then
It's a good idea.
Handed that role that everybody, every A-lister wanted that role. And to Scott Rudin and Aaron's credit, they go, no, we got Jeff. We're going to stay with Jeff. And I'm thrilled they did.
Jeff Daniels will be at the Town Crier in Beacon on Sunday night. And you can find out more about that event by going to towncrier.com, towncrier.com. You can also find out more about Jeff and his music. Great website. It's jeffdaniels.com, jeffdaniels.com. Jeff, what a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much. Have fun on the road, and we look forward to having you in town.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it.
Be well. Take care. Again, Jeff Daniels will be at the Town Crier Cafe in Beacon, New York, this Sunday, October 19th at 7:30 p.m. You can find out more by going to towncrier.com, T-O-W-N-E, towncrier.com. You can also check out his website, jeffdaniels.com. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Say goodbye to all that pain. Say goodbye to the same old lions and the curse of Bobby Lane. On my phone was Peyton Manning.
Jeff, I feel your pain. Will you join me in exercising the curse of Bobby Lane?
Just like that,
we started winning.
Just like that,
we were playoff bound.
Just like that,
way up in heaven.
Just like that,
Bobby Lane turned around.
Say goodbye to all that sorrow. Say goodbye.
A bathtub full of whiskey and a helmet full of holes.
I proclaimed my proclamation with all my heart and all my soul.
Say goodbye to all that sorrow. Say goodbye. Say goodbye to all that pain. Say goodbye to the same old lions and the curse of Bobby Lane. Say goodbye.
And the curse of Bobby Lane.